Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Inside the Game of Politics with Pat McCrory is presented by Felix Savadas Mercedes-Benz of South Charlotte, Charlotte's premier Mercedes-Benz dealer and the Carolinas' number one volume sales leader. Over 300 new and 200 pre-owned vehicles always available. Visit mbcharlotte.com.
As a governor, mayor, businessman, I know the game. Been played by the game. Now we are exposing the game for you.
This is Inside the Game of Politics with Pat McCrory.
Our guest today is Fox News host Brian Kilmeade. In addition to co-hosting the popular Fox News morning show Fox and Friends, Brian is also the host of Fox News Radio, nationally syndicated The Brian Kilmeade Show, and Fox Nation's What Made America Great, where he reveals the hidden history behind some of America's most iconic locations that help shape our country. Brian will be doing his live stage show, America, Great from the Start, in Charlotte on August the 9th at the Booth Playhouse, and we'll be talking more about that in a few minutes. But first, Brian Kilmeade, welcome to Inside the Game of Politics with Pat McCrory.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on, Pat. I appreciate it.
Brian, one question. Give me a personal example of the good, the bad, and the outrageous or funny that you've personally encountered in politics. And let's start out with the good. Give me a good story that maybe people don't know about some encounter you had with politics that we as a country need to know about.
Well, I'll tell you what. I witnessed it firsthand. And you know, being on the air in 9/11 when the planes hit, and first everyone thought it was a Cessna, and then it was obviously a jetliner, and then they pull out what might have been an accident, then it was real, and then having a chance to go down there and watching, sadly, the towers fall, and then seeing the rubble up close and personal. And then once they try to make sure that planes could fly and the attacks wouldn't continue, and the Pentagon was hit and they began to rebuild, I watched as all the bureaucrats and politicians teamed together to fix downtown. First, to calmly, in a cool fashion, in the most respectful way possible, find any survivors and the bodies of those underneath. To see the way everybody acted in concert, not blaming, just taking action, to see celebrities serving food during the day. Donald Trump was down there often. Evander Holyfield, offering everything he can, the whole Met and Yankee team, combining with the mayor and rallying around the president. I had no idea who they voted for, but in the end, he was one guy's president. Then to watch as everything was gutted and then rebuilt. And then although it didn't go as quick as I wanted, sooner or later, everybody got out of the way and they designed the most remarkable memorial in my lifetime. Now, I spent a lot of times on Fox Nation doing What Made America Great and looking at history and going to presidential homes and seeing what was. But I watched the most horrific attack happen possible. And now I can go visit one of the most intriguing, insightful, awe-inspiring museums and tributes to those who lost their lives and to things that happened that day. I can't believe what they were able to put together. So that to me is politics, free market, firemen, cops, combining efforts, engineers for one cause to do something, make something good out of something so horrific. So that to me is my good.
Brian, it's kind of interesting. I was mayor of Charlotte. I served as mayor of Charlotte for 14 years. And, of course, in 2001, I was in my mayor's office when we saw the second plane hit the building on live TV. And it was just amazing to watch Giuliani, because as a mayor, I was a fellow mayor of Giuliani. In fact, I'd been there 2 months before that, touring his operations center at the World Trade Center. And what was amazing to me, and I'd love to get your feedback on that good part, Giuliani came like the spokesperson for the nation as a mayor. And I found that other people coming up to me, Mayor McCrory, what's going on, as opposed to going to the governor or the president at the time.
Yeah, I mean, he gave a lot of credence to being a mayor. New York City is the financial hub of the state. And you go upstate New York, and a lot of listeners who haven't been there, they think everything's like New York City. It's more like Iowa and Wyoming. It is wide open. And by the way, need of fracking. Even if environmentally it all checked out, this governor won't do it because it doesn't make Democrats look good. Yeah. But it would revitalize and change lives. A lot of people are hurting. But you saw a mayor take charge. People appreciate great leadership at any level. But what leadership is not being a bully and saying, get out of my way. It's getting other people involved, not looking for credit. I think one of the great things that Giuliani did, he deflected all credit. He just did it. And that's what people appreciate, that you can't teach. He just said, I got to take action, never raised his voice, knew that everyone was looking at him as a point person. And by the way, not everybody was behind him before the attack.
Oh, no, he was very unpopular before the attack. I was walking the streets with him 2 months earlier, and he was at one of his lowest points.
Going through a very public divorce.
Absolutely.
With a TV anchor mm-hmm. who was very popular. So I don't get involved in divorces, but when you have young kids and getting divorced and you're a mayor of the number one city in the world, outside yours, number one city in the world, or let's say one of the most popular cities in the world, and everybody's commenting on it, and you're a mayor that used to sit down before Trump was doing this with the Washington press conferences, mm-hmm. he did it every day with the New York. They used to yell at each other. You would say, we would televise some of this. We would think it was the British House of Commons. And that's the way he was. So,
you know, real
it shows
quick,
what a mayor's impact can be.
Before we go to the bad, you mentioned Donald Trump. He was, of course, in the private sector at that time. What did Trump do during 9/11 that you personally saw?
He was down there almost every day. I mean, he was down there at least once a week, twice a week, putting himself in front of the cameras, talking about he'll do whatever needs to be done, not being very critical of, you know, he wasn't saying George Bush missed opportunities. You know, he was on our show every week, which I'll talk about later. But he was common sight. He was doing all the shows, stayed in New York City during that time, was able to witness it, have impact. And as Bernie Kerik said today, as police commissioner,
yeah.
I saw him as often as any high-profile person during those times.
Hmm. That's a great example. Okay.
And he had a big push to rebuild the Twin Towers exactly the way they were, and he had a big press conference because he said it wants to go back in your face. But the bottom line is no one really was in – enthralled with the way the Twin Towers were designed. They thought it could have been done better, and I think it was. I just love what they've done down there.
I do, too. You know, it beats any building that was built in the 60s and 70s is bad architecture. It's almost Soviet-style architecture anyway that I think we all regret at this point in time. But the new building, you ought to be proud of it. And how about the bad in politics, something personal that you just go, are you kidding me, that you personally witnessed or were involved with or had to give feedback on?
Wow. You know, the bad, you know, we get, you know, you mentioned you've been attacked. It gets frustrating when you're attacked unjustifiably. Sometimes you just make mistakes. And I'm on the air minimum 6 hours a day. And if I'm not making mistakes in an unscripted situation, I don't think I'm trying. I think it's kind of I don't think I'm truly putting a good effort forward because you got to go after it. There's a lot of things breaking and things happening. And you look back and I think to myself, that's not what I said. And sometimes you look back and go, wow, I got to go clarify that. I get it. But what I was stunned by is President Obama, with all his poise and all his charisma, went out of his way almost every month, 6 weeks, to talk about how Fox attacks him and doesn't give him a fair shot. Mm. I thought to myself, for 8 years, you went around because Fox would actually not report everything he did as if he was walking on water. We would talk about the deficits. We would talk about the ramifications of make people being forced businesses, small businesses, to make people have insurance if it's over 20 employees. We talked about how high taxes were discouraging investment in different areas of the country and how vilifying rich people probably was anti-American. And he was obsessed with Fox for almost 8 years. And at the one point, he even boxed our Washington reporters out of coverage. It took the rest of the Washington media to force them to act. So it was nonstop push and pull. Well, you don't mind criticism. President Trump now is being attacked by every media outlet outside only a handful on a daily basis. And when he does stuff good and you can't deny it, when the growth is there, when the unemployment is low, they talk about something else. And they're 100% unfair. And, I mean, for you to write this Elijah Cummings story and not point out the fact that what Trump said was true, that Elijah Cummings actually described it the same way, you see how unfair it is. President Obama would get some tough questions from whether it was Bret Baier or whether it was Bill O'Reilly or Jennifer Griffin or whoever the handful of interviews he had. And sometimes you would jump in because he is a human filibuster. Now, look at the way they jump in on Trump. Jake Tapper, Chuck Todd. They never let him finish a question. They treat him like he's some high school reporter. And when you interrupted Barack Obama, there was huge blowback. So he had the press protecting him, and he used his time to attack people that didn't claim he walked on water. So I thought that was bad.
Dude, the Jake Tappers of the world, and believe me, I've been on CNN and done the interviews, and they interrupted me constantly. They'd ask me three questions. I'm not even in the first sentence, and they're interrupting me. Do they know they're doing it? Do they know they're biased, do you think? When you talk about the bad and positive, do you think they know they're biased?
Yeah, I think fundamentally. I don't know them, really. I've never talked to Chuck Todd in my life. I've talked to Jake Tapper a couple of times. I don't know them, so I can't tell you what they think. What I think is they are, personally, they seem to be justifying their lack of balance because they feel he's unworthy. And they feel since he's unworthy and do things that are atypical for the office, it's okay to treat him in a unorthodox way, and unorthodox to be generous. But I can't really tell you what they think. I don't hang out in the lunchroom with them. So they have no interest in giving him a break at all. Although I thought Chuck Todd gave him a pretty fair interview when they did sit down with him. And
yeah, I do meet the press about every 3 months, and I'm kind of the one conservative on the panel. I'm on these panels, and I've been on CNN, and I've been on Fox and so forth many times, but since I've left the governor's office, I'm on these panels occasionally, and I notice they tend to interrupt the conservative, especially nonstop on CNN and the MSNBCs, and you can't get a word in edgewise.
Look at what happened with Mulvaney this weekend. Oh. Margaret Brennan didn't let him finish a sentence, but Mulvaney is so quick on his feet, it didn't matter. It hurt the audience and hurt her show. It didn't hurt him because he's got all the answers. But because he wouldn't agree, she kept cutting him off. And the week before, she did the same thing. She does, and the next guest, let's just talk infinitum. I mean, to allow Bernie Sanders to continue to say Medicare for all will eliminate bureaucracy. Are you kidding? It's the definition of bureaucracy. We let him talk as if he makes sense. Does anyone want to ask Bernie Sanders, where have you done this? Where has it worked? Your governor tried it in Vermont. It crashed and burned. Nobody could afford it. Why have you been in Congress for 50 years and have almost no accomplishments except for crashing the VA? So how can you let him talk uninterrupted and say you're being fair? That just astounds me.
It continues to bewilder me, too, and I've always asked, it's like dealing with a liar. Do they know they're lying, or they've just gotten so used to it that they believe their lies themselves? And I'm wondering that about some of the journalists.
Yes, that's why I can't jump. I don't so know those guys. I can only know their work.
Right.
And obviously, if they're smart guys, I feel as though he is so unworthy for the job that they could say anything.
So when President Obama went after Fox, did you have any personal encounters with him in this area?
The ironic thing is, he used to come on when he was Senator Obama competing with Hillary Clinton,
right?
And they used to they were accusing us of being too nice to Hillary Clinton because we found other things in the background in the back on both. When Barack Obama came, when he had his book out, he came and did our show, was sitting in the green room by himself. I thought he felt like he was treated fairly, but he never felt like he was going to come back. And, you know, I don't care, but we were at the Washington Correspondents' Dinner. He mocked Fox and Friends, which is kind of a compliment. But I just found it fascinating. I'm thinking to myself, for a show you don't watch, for a network you don't like, you certainly know a lot about it.
Yeah, we're all hypocrites in that area, aren't we?
Right.
As a politician, I've got caught going, I hate your newspaper, but I read it every day.
But if you see, I actually say that I've been watching less and less of the other channels. I used to try to like to scout guests for the radio,
right,
or
right,
you know, and get an idea. But I go, it's just so obvious what they're going to say. We on our channel, I know I'm biased because I'm here, but you don't have to switch the channel to get another opinion. I mean, Dana's show and Shep's show, totally different. Outnumbers 100% different than Fox and Friends. You look at Martha McCallum's show, it's nothing like Fox Report, which has got balance. On the panels every day and Martha McCallum's. Then you have opinion shows like Sean Hannity, which is very different than the opinion of Tucker Carlson, which is Tucker's very different from Laura. And we have a great news show at 11, Shannon. So you don't really have to flip the channel. We got everybody coming on.
And there is seems to be a firewall between news and your opinion.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, there are people that bleed back and forth. For example, if the news is breaking, they don't say we're turning it over to the news. I mean, we're up. We're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing it. There's no time for opinion. So there's a fire. There's a shooting in California. We came in, if there's Sandy Hook or there's some tragedy during our show. I mean, we're it. We're news. You want our opinion about it, we'll give you in the A box. After the news breaks and we covered it, the next day we'll come back and say, yeah, look at this gunman. Look at his background. I don't know what it is, but we'll give that. We'll give the story. Then give opinion. Now, on Martha's show, you'll get some opinion, but it's usually from the guests. And on Sean's show, it's nonstop, this opinion. And on Laura's show, nonstop. And Tucker, nonstop. And that's good. I think when people are home, if they want to watch the regular news, go ahead. There's Channel 115 on Sirius. Listen to us. Now it's streamed. And there's headline news every day. But guess what? Headline news gets a 0.1 or a 0.2. And they do a good job. But the people don't want nonstop somebody reading the teleprompter. They want human beings.
And they want personality, too.
I think so, too.
They want a human connection, empathy, and so forth. Outrageous in politics that you've personally encountered, or funny, that maybe the public doesn't know about, that this is a chance to tell the story of something outrageous, a personal encounter with a politician or something that you just went, I can't believe that just happened.
Well, I don't have anything. I was trying to think of this ahead of time, and I kind of came up short, except for how bizarre it is on a regular basis that a guest that we had on our show every Tuesday for about 7 years, and sometimes Monday, is President of the United States. And he
calls in.
He called in.
I saw it recently.
Oh, yeah, and he calls in recently, even during the show. But you saw how quick he was and decisive he was on issues, where he would call in, never late, ever, at 7:02, and he would – know what he'd be on about 7:04, and he would get his issues at 7:02, and he'd be able to ready to go. Very rarely would he ever kick something to the curb, usually because it was something with The Apprentice or a rivalry with Mark Cuban. Everyone's sort of like, yeah, I don't want to get into that. You know, but besides that, whatever. So you're talking about the economy, you're talking about international relations, you're talking about an ongoing war, your GDP, whatever it was. I got it. Culture. And listen, he made a ton of news for us. And sometimes he made things harder on himself, on us. But to think that Donald Trump is president of the United States and that he was our guest every Tuesday is like surreal.
So what do you do when you got to cut off the president and you got to make money and go to a commercial break?
We don't. We usually give him an hour. I mean, we go 45 minutes. We schedule a half hour. We don't go to break with the president. So we'll just
– Do you see a difference in the peak of the audience while he's on then immediately?
It basically doubles. So as soon as he pops on, because, again, it's unscripted. He knows no idea what we're going to talk about, but he never does now these days.
How much advance warning do you typically get? Has he ever just a minute day before the show go, I'm coming on, I'm calling? And you go, and the producer goes, my God, the president of the United States is on the air.
It's been a while. It's been a while. He might have, not that I remember, usually get a day's notice. So, you know, and what he's done is he's eliminated the press secretary briefings, but he's the briefing.
All right, I got to ask you this question about the outrageous. How do you feel when Saturday Night Live does something on you and you're watching it for the first time?
The first time I was like, why did I get the fat guy?
Why did I get the what?
Why did I get the fat guy? I'm like, so wait a second. I'll take the dumb, but I don't think I gave that impression. So, you know, fat and dumb wasn't the most flattering thing. You know, we have a huge audience, but it's not, you know, we're not getting Johnny Carson in 1970,
yeah.
25 million. So a lot of people get exposed to me for the first time, and that's how they're always going to view me. There's nothing I'm going to do about that. It kind of leveled off the last few years. But
have you ever talked to the actor who portrays you and said, hey, quit making me so damn fat?
Well, that would be an insult to him, but he is a comedian, so if he's going to insult me, he should be ready to take it. No, I've never spoken to him before.
So real quick, Brian, how did you find out that you were portrayed on Saturday Night Live? Did your phone just go off the hook late at night when you were in bed?
The weird thing is I've never, ever seen the show live, and I wanted to, and I actually had an offer, and this is the first time I got an offer. They go, Brian, we have you seats. We're not going to be able to tell you till that morning. So I go, I don't think, if you guys could give me tickets, I'm not going to know. I'm not going to be able to reschedule my day. So sure enough, in the morning I get a call and they go, we have two tickets for you. And I said, this is a friend of mine that used to work at NBC.
Two tickets in the audience.
To the audience. And they had nothing conjunction, just ironic that I would have been in the audience had I been able to clear out my Saturday night watching myself being portrayed on television. So it would have been weird. It's bizarre. But you know what I miss? Saturday Night Live used to be coy with their comedy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, where they stood, but it was funny.
Yeah.
Now it is like a show from MS. It's a comedy show from MSNBC.
Yeah.
They don't even want, I mean, you're going to tell me there's no comedy in how off the hinges the press is on the president? I mean, how they're blaming everything on Trump. There's no comedy there.
It wasn't insulting either. Chevy Chase doing Gerald Ford tripping, where he didn't even act like Gerald Ford, but it was funny. I mean, Ross Perot, you know, the famous Gore debates. I can't believe I'm losing to this guy. You know, it was almost dry humor.
And do you remember they parodied Barack Obama when he was Senator Obama competing with Hillary Clinton, who was rightly complaining. She goes, I get all these hard questions and I always got to go first. So remember that?
Yeah, I do.
So they do this hysterical, I thought it was just fantastic debate mock-up where Hillary Clinton, Medvedev, had just been named president.
Right.
And nobody knew his name. And he goes, the new president of Russia is? She goes, starts with an M. It's Medvedev. And they go, Senator Obama, what is the new president of Russia? He goes, Medvedev. He goes, very smart. His next question was, President Obama, Senator Obama, can I get you a pillow? Yes. You can't find these clips on, I'm telling you, go to YouTube. You cannot find these clips to play back. We always play stuff back, especially in the radio show.
Right.
They're almost impossible. They pushed that back because we all knew that the press was pulling for Barack Obama.
It was so obvious. And again, they didn't interrupt Barack Obama in an interview. They would not do it. He would do the best filibuster of any candidate I've ever seen, and the media would let him get away with it.
No question.
All right. America Great from the Start in Charlotte on August the 9th at the Booth Playhouse, a beautiful theater, by the way. You'll love downtown Charlotte. You'll end up moving here, by the way, after you come.
It'll be like the rest of New York.
Absolutely. So what does the public going to get from America Great from the Start?
More patriotism than politics, but we do open it up at the end. And what I do is I'm able to move through using it's going to be streamed live on Fox Nation. So you see it around the world. And on stage, I'm able to move through my books and through American history, George Washington's Secret Six, Thomas Jefferson, the Tripoli Pirates, Andrew Jackson, the Miracle of New Orleans, and soon to be released, Sam Houston, the Alamo Avengers. So I want to tell America's story. And I don't sit there and say, high five, everything's perfect. But I tell you, and I think people understand as I study and write it, that we got so close so many times to total annihilation or never coming to be. My hope is we'll get a new appreciation for what this country was, where we came from, and where we're going. And I open up with the sports books where I talk about basically in life how it's so important to fail, even if it means, you know, because your success can be delayed, not denied. Because I wrote two books, The Games Do Count, and It's How You Play the Game. We interviewed 90 people about what they did in sports that set them up for success in life later. And I'm able to weave that through, and we kind of put it on stage. And then Fox Nation says, let's stream it, give people a chance to talk to you after. So there's a whole unscripted thing feel to it.
Well, you're right at the town square of Charlotte where you're going to be doing this on August the 9th, America Great from the Start. And at that town square, right around that area, we actually attacked Cornwallis troops. And that's where the name Hornet's Nest came from, the Charlotte Hornets. And Cornwallis said, it's a bunch of damn hornets around here. It's like a hornet's nest, because we would almost use the old Viet Cong strategy, because most of the Revolutionary War was fought in the two Carolinas, near Charlotte.
Yeah, I mean, early on it was north, and then it moved south and ended at Yorktown, famously, which is another place you got to visit. I did not know that about Hornet's Nest. And I just think that these are the stories. This is what people say. They never say, I don't like history. They say, I never learned like it. I never knew this part of history. And if I knew, if history would come to life like this, I would have liked it more. And when people say, I don't like history, I say, do you like stories? They say, yes. Do you like true stories? They say, yes. Do you like true stories about your country? And they say, yes. I go, welcome to American history. Let's learn. I mean, you don't have to learn. Let's understand it. We never said we were perfect, but I think what's great about us, we try to be, and we hold ourselves up to that standard still today.
Brian Kilmeade, what a great idea for a live stage show, America Great from the Start, in Charlotte on August the 9th at the Booth Playhouse. I look forward to seeing you in person, and I'm sure you'll have a great turnout. And don't forget about the Hornet's Nest history. You are. Cornwallis. The reason Cornwallis lost in Yorktown is because he lost most of his troops in Charlotte and Greensboro and Kings Mountain and parts of South Carolina. He was worn out by the time he got to Yorktown. So
didn't have the guts to surrender
himself. In fact, General Greene, Greensboro and Greenville are both named after General Greene.
Don't tell anybody. Greene. They're going to change it.
You know, you're right. They might tear down the statues any minute.
All right, BrianKilmeade.com/tour to see you in person. We're just about sold out. We opened up more VIPs yesterday.
Oh, well, that's me all the way.
I know.
I mean, you know, come on.
Well, then you're going to be forced to have quality time with me, so I don't know if you want that, Governor.
We're honored to have you on the Inside Game of Politics with Pat McCrory. Brian Kilmeade, we'll see you in Charlotte soon.
Thanks, Pat.
Thanks for listening to Inside the Game of Politics with Pat McCrory. To contact the show, email PatMcCroryShow@WBT.com. You can hear more from Pat every weekday morning from 8 to 10 on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT or at WBTonRadio.com. Monday, it's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama where one judge is shaking up the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor,
we're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench, everything is different.
A new episode of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake.
It's important.
Followed by a new episode of Bull, Monday at 9, 8 central on CBS.